This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All this time, Porter, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
To WorldCast, a WCW retrospective. We're following the stuff on the WWE Network. We're looking at episode 20, May 28th, 1982, and this is WorldCast episode 12. And heck, I'm with Kelly and John. Kelly, man, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. You forgot a C in WCCW, and I think it's...
Did I? Okay, I mean, I'm tired.
And I think it's actually May 8th, 1982, just to be accurate.
It is. You're probably... Yep, you're right. I'm looking at my notes, and I do have the two scratched out.
That's okay. I'm the historian, so I'm here to know.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I don't know what the followers and listeners would do if I got the damn date wrong.
Well, come on, Pete. You know how fucking people are on the internet.
Yeah,
they'd be like, man, he said episode 20, but he said the 28th. It's the 8th on here. I don't shit. Should I watch it?
Yeah, you'd ruin their lives. You'd ruin their petty.
It's like
lives.
It's like that Simpsons where Homer's Poochie, and they're at the comic shop. The nerds are talking to them, and they're like, in episode 632.
But it's pretty neat, though, man. I don't know if you guys saw that email they sent out, the network. But, I mean, they've uploaded 80 episodes, 80-plus episodes of World Class, mm-hmm. man.
Yeah.
That's giving us more than, a pocket look of looking at a snapshot. This is giving us a pretty damn pretty cool timeline of 80s wrestling of the company, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. I don't get any of these emails. And I never got one of those offers for a free month. I guess, what's a guy got to do?
Well, I guess cancel your subscription.
That's what I hear. You cancel it for like a month, and then they'll give you a free 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. I guess, you know, you can definitely tell they're kind of, the network's kind of getting away from the first... you know, the new content. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, like everyone is up in arms because they really. I mean, I'd be a little upset. I'm not like I'm pissed or anything, but I would have liked them to show that Starcade show they're doing.
Yeah.
But they're showing that it's really not. You know, it's not going to draw extra buys to the network to produce this. Mm-hmm. So it actually is just losing money, and which is a lot of what their first run programming, I think, kind of. Has shown that they have this stuff already in the can. Why not put it up? It makes people happy, and it still shows them that they're putting new content up on the network.
Yeah, and
it's win-win.
And two things to that is the original programming that people like is cheap to do. Is Table for Three and the Ride Along. You know, yeah. That doesn't cost anything to do. And also, one of the reasons why they're dumping all this World Class, I think, and it goes back to a previous conversation, is I think Vince has anything to do with us being picked, but people know – people who work there are of the same mindset. And if you're going to look at all this old-timey footage and see tons of it is just studio wrestling or just shots of – the static one shot, but World Class was ahead of the game. They had the cool camera angles, the camera inside the ring and all that. And there's a presentation to it. So that, and it's, and for the most part, it looks great. So why put that up?
Yeah. And then when we get later into 1983 and beyond, it starts feeling more like a Nitro or a Raw episode in the sense where you're getting, you know, multiple main events type of matches and stuff like that, and angles and competitive matches. Like right now, the talent level just isn't up there to where we're getting at.
And speaking of Starcade or Mid-Atlantic, the rumor mill says that the next dump of old shows is going to be like Mid-Atlantic 1981-82.
Which I think is cool.
Yeah,
that's not something I thought about. And the other thing you got to remember, World Class was like the, I mean, I think it was like the second territory they bought. I mean, library they bought, maybe. And so they had a lot of this stuff already going for their 24/7.
Oh, yeah.
All they're doing is... just bringing it over here and putting it online. So that has something to do with it too.
Yes. Hey, the only thing we don't have for 24/7 is the show's opening and closing with Michael Hayes and Kevin Von Erich stumbling through some synopsis.
Exactly. I mean, we have enough of that in Kevin's interviews on these things. So I don't think we need to show that he hasn't improved his interviewing skills in 20, 30, 40 years. But let's get right into this, man. And Johnny, we open up with a Frank Dusick promo.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, they finally got Mark Lawrence's name right.
Yeah.
The graphic.
Thank God for that.
You know, and Dusick cuts a pretty goddamn great promo, to be perfectly honest with you. It's talking about Wild Bill Irwin, and he's coming to get your boy. And then his go home line is like, "And I'm coming to take your soul." And walks away. And I was like, "Damn, that was pretty good." I dug it. Shortened to the point.
What about you, Kelly?
Yeah, he's a good promo for sure. He's back. He was gone for a while. But what I want to know is, why is it so windy inside the sportatorium?
It's not windy. It's actually freaking hot as hell.
Yeah.
So they have fans.
Oh, okay. Wow. That makes total sense. And I feel
you don't see them right now as much, but in 1983, when they start drawing, you'll see fans everywhere in the shots.
Yeah.
Because when you have that many people in there, they don't want people to have freaking dying of heat stroke.
It's literally in a tin shack.
In Texas.
God, can you imagine those fans just pushing all that stink just here and there and everywhere?
That's funny. Living in Canada, you just don't think of things like that.
Yeah, I was in an indie building recently in Texas, and when the AC units went out, and it was brutal, brother. I mean, it feels like an oven if they're not prepped for it. But I'm with you guys. I thought this was an excellent promo. Dusick shows why he's an asset to any promotion he's in. You know, even if he's not a top guy, he's a guy you can prop. You know, you roll on out there. You know, here's your talking points. He does a promo. He's able to eat time up for you, and do it well. And I thought this was fantastic. But you know what? The one thing I look at it here, I'm going to play a little fantasy Booker, but wouldn't he feel like he'd be better as like Gary Hart's partner in the H&H, minus, you know, not having an H for a last name.
See, that's the problem.
Promo than Hussein, and a better worker.
Oh yeah, he's better than Hussein on all levels. But maybe that was the point of having Hussein there, was like as a contrast to Hart, and made Hart look a million times better.
Yeah, he is the Booker. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he did.
And it's also because, you know, Frank Dusick would need one other thing. He'd need to be doing a millionaire gimmick, because that's a whole part of the H&H thing, is that his financing is from Prince, from the original Prince Nana.
Yeah.
Hey, he could easily done the J.R. Ewing oilman.
Oh yeah,
type of thing, you know.
He can afford these swanky robes, you know. Lorenz keeps talking about.
Hell yeah! And hell, speaking of Frank Dusick, we get a match with the spoiler, Kelly. What's going on here?
Well, my first notes were about, and I've mentioned this on previous episodes, how much I love the improved production, and I just love the ringside camera angles. It's really modernized the whole look of the show very quickly. Lots of quick cuts now and crowd shots. It's just a huge improvement in production. It's amazing. like, I knew that was the thing that, you know, that was what happened. They were trailblazing and all that. But to have watched the early episodes and then now to see it change over, it really makes it more impressive. What an accomplishment it was to update everything. And just even when the action isn't anything special, it makes everything seem more dynamic. So as for the match, it was not a bad little bout, back and forth. And Dusik thought he won with a tainted win with his feet on the ropes, but the ref overruled it, and then the spoiler quickly rolls him up. So he didn't get destroyed or anything, Dusik. He's being protected somewhat. He's like the top mid-card heel. So, and the spoiler's a legend, so there's no shame in losing to him. It was an okay match.
Yeah, what about you, Johnny?
Yeah, I thought the match itself was going to be a lot better than it was, but it was fine. But let's get into some of the trimmings of it, if you will. Mm-hmm. Mark Lawrence, he's talking about the breakup. The breakup between Dusik and Wild Bill. He goes, the breakup is headline national news. Yeah. Like Dick and Liz.
It's on the cover. Brokeback Mountain, I think.
Yeah, it's on the cover of People, and then we're going to get in because there's going to be a lot of talk about the crowd shots, specifically this one, because they find my favorite little group of these chicks. You know, hot for wrestling chick standards in 1982, I guess. But, you know, they looked about like 16, 18. I'd better say 18. You know, it's creepy. But there's one in particular who's really into it.
A 2-year age difference.
Yeah, you know. And Jerry Lawler is my favorite.
47-year-old ass.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying what's legal to talk about. Like, Jerry Lawler's my favorite wrestler. He rubs off on. the one chick, she's got glasses on. And I guess spoilers got a leg lock on Dusik, and it gets her. She screamed the top of her lungs. She's like, "Break his leg!"
Yeah,
I was like, "Damn!" I'm like, holy shit! And there were so many shots of fucking rednecks and hillbillies just everywhere, you know. Of course, and I'm just laughing. And before anyone says anything, I'll make fun of any crowd. Don't give this whole East Coast guy. Just like, you know, I've been to ECW shows. There's a lot to make fun of. But there's just a lot of fucking chewing tobacco and hats. and then they're all into it. And then there's one shot towards the end. They get the more yuppie-ish, the preppy kids and people who came to the matches who are just looking around like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah, there you go. And they're just kind of like, what the fuck is all this shit? They're just looking at a bunch of screaming hillbillies. That's pretty much all there was to it for me. When I saw Dusik in the spoiler, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And it was like, no, it was okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought we got good work, good solid work, good counter wrestling. Overall, solid bout. You know, I mean, it's an opener, so, I mean, you're not expecting that to tear everything apart. So I thought it was good, solid stuff to start the show. Then we get old King Kong Bundy and Bugsy McGraw versus Johnny's favorite wrestler, Tom Boogaloo Shaft. And who is he teaming with?
Ken Mantell, dude, is my nightmare. Dude, when I saw it's fucking Tom Boogaloo Shaft and Ken Mantell as a team, I honest to God, I became physically angry
watching this. Yeah, as Jim Ross would say, bone shoe ugly, those guys. Kelly, what were you thinking here, man? What were your thoughts? We know Johnny had to take some blood medication. What about you?
Yeah, well, I feel almost the same way about Shaft and Mantell. I mean, they were already one of my least favorite tag teams ever before the bell rang for this match. God. Mantell looks like a jobber. I mean, I know he was technically fine in the ring, but his look is horrible. He needs to hang it up and become
Kelly, he looks, I have to interrupt because I have this yet. He looks like Richard Dreyfuss fucked Larry Fine.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, he looks like a high school chemistry teacher or something. He's pretty dull to look at. I just can't stand him. Shaft was I like the Bundy and Bugsy team though. This is a cool little team that's come together in the last few weeks, and they just maul Shaft, and he gets pinned. This was another quick match. It was basically a squash, And I love Bundy and Bugsy slugging each other after the match, like King Kong and Godzilla on the same team. It's a cool little team, and I'm glad that Shaft and Mantell were squashed like bugs in this one.
Yeah, you know, they almost did the sumo thing afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. And,
I absolutely love that finish where it was like the sandwich squash.
Yeah.
The conveyor, what you would call it, the trash compactor.
Yeah.
And then Star Wars and stuff. Except actually got to squish them. what you make of it?
I don't know, man. That finisher looked like to me their finisher, them doing a DP on Tom Shaft. that'll take anyone down. But yeah. So the match stinks, and it's not B&B's fault. Ooh, B&B. And of course, again, they're just hammering home about what a traitor King Kong Bundy is. And I'm like, you know, he starts here. He's like, the Von Erichs took him from nothing. I'm like, oh, fuck you. He made a sound business decision. And it's proven that it's a sound business decision because he's one of the all-time greats, you know. And he wouldn't have been headlining WrestleMania 2 as a fucking Alaskan lumberjack oil worker, whatever. Fuck you. He made the right choice. Now, what's he doing now? He's in main events. He's a tag team champion. What was he with the Von Erichs? Nothing.
Okay.
So
we're talking about old gimmicks here on Bundy. This is the old whale guy, or Crusher Yurikov, which later would become
Bam Bigelow.
What was the worst gimmick, guys?
Oh, no, oil, smiling oil worker Bundy. Crusher Yurikov at least had a cool name.
Really?
Kinda.
Yurikov. I mean, Bigelow hated it. He referred to it as Crusher Yurikov.
Well, that's why it's funny. But and then also, and this is going to be a tightrope, okay? But we all know that Hussein blows a whistle. But apparently, there's a chick there. She's a heavier girl in a green shirt. And she's got a whistle. And she's blowing that whistle. And she hears a little salt and pepper. And I kind of look at her and I realize, oh, she's special. And I was like, Fritz Von Erich is, you know, for all I say about him, he's shown that everyone can come out to the matches and have a good time and bring your whistle if you want to.
I saw a lot of people with whistles back in the day in Calgary.
Really?
Well,
oh, wait, whistles. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Were they rape whistles?
No. I mean, people who would use whistles, I guess I should say.
Well, actually, that reminds me of an old Dana Gould joke. Technically, couldn't any whistle be a rape whistle? Unless it's a...
Is there such a thing as a new Dana Gould joke?
You know, yeah, all the time. But unless it's a slide whistle, that would be kind of odd.
Oh, man. But hey, then this leads us into a Gary Hart interview.
Mm.
Who, I mean, clearly, guys, he's been an MVP, really, of these early shows. Like, we look forward to his interviews. I just recently turned in my Wrestling Observer ballot. He made my Hall of Fame ballot again this year. I thought this was awesome. Johnny, take it away.
Okay, well, first of all, before we get to the meat of that, Kabuki is in fucking armor. He is in full samurai golden bronze armor. You know, you can't even see his face. And he looks badass as fuck. And then Gary Hart, off the top of his head, mind you, spins a web of improvised, wonderful bullshit that it's just fantastic. And then it goes from fantastic to fucking bonkers. He's just rolling with it. And he's getting into why he always goes after Asians as his clients. Because he says, and he gets off the unfortunate line, the Asian race. And then he says, because only Asians are cold-blooded enough.
Yes.
And I was like, oh. But he's deep in. He's deep in. And apparently the end game, according to this promo, is to literally murder Fritz Von Erich. Yeah. only these cold-blooded Asians can fucking do it. And it ends on a boom. It's not run you out of the territory. It's literally murder this man. And it's awesome. It's fantastic.
Kelly, do you have any thoughts on this promo?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it was when I watched this promo that I was reminded of the great line that Johnny Valentine had about how he can't make the people believe wrestling is real, but he can make them believe he's real. And I think that's the same. The same could be said about Gary Hart, is that he can make the people think he's real. Compared to everybody else, he comes off as more real. He's just so serious and articulate, and yeah, he's real as a heart attack. And the line was, only Asians are cold-blooded enough to do to you what I want. was Fritz Von Erich. Of course, yeah, he's been at it with Fritz for probably almost 20 years, and he's come to the point where he wants to go.
You know, you can't, these fucking lazy American wrestlers can't get it done. You get some efficient, good, hard-working
Yeah. Days. And he's going to bring in the dragon from Macau. I love Macau. How he took Macau.
Now, years ago in Titans, we did a Mount Rushmore manager.
Yeah,
I had Gary Hart on mine. Is Gary Hart's status going up for both you guys? How about you?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen before we started watching this. I'd seen, you know, not a ton of Gary Hart, but enough to know that I really liked him and thought he was one of the better managers ever, and one of my favorite managers. I just, because he's so unique in that he's not a chicken shit, he's not a cartoon character, he's a badass, and yeah, his stock's definitely rising with each passing week.
Yeah, totally different aura than pretty much any other manager I've ever seen. He just personifies evil. I mean, there's been, like, bad trouble guys, like Skandar Akbar kind of was close to that, but Gary just had it to a whole nother level. Even if you look back, like, his Florida days where he had, like, the hit
mustache.
And, I mean, the dude always personified evil. Johnny, how's his status working for you? Is it watching these promos, early promos, and world class? Is he growing further?
Yes, because I'm just so happy to see all this great material that I've never seen before. But I also always loved Gary Hart. I'm more of feeling spiteful until I'm like, yeah, all you assholes who always say Gary Hart stunk. You know, well, you guys, yeah, well, watch this. You're fucking wrong. You know, we're right. You're wrong. So fuck you. And here's what it was about Gary Hart. Having read his biography, autobiography, like, as you both have as well, you know, he grew up rough in Chicago. You know, he was doing like deliveries for the mob and carried a fucking blade. Okay. Yeah. And then he got into the fucking wrestling business, which was a downgrade. Okay. And so when he goes out there, he talks with a street guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he always wears suits,
mm-hmm,
and eventually Cosby sweaters, and we've already made that joke. But he presents himself as a normal dude. Yeah. He's not outlandish. He wears gray sports coats and everything, and he rarely yells, you know, but he can spin a web, and you could tell that what happened to this guy in his childhood that fucked him up and made him this way, because he's exactly what you said, Kelly. He's real. He can start talking about this crazy Asian bullshit, and you fucking believe it because Gary Hart's saying it, and it's, you know, he says bad shit stuff, and you take him serious, as you said, serious as a heart attack. You know, he's fucking awesome.
He could say he was behind the JFK assassination, and you'd buy it, you know. That believable.
Little Jackie crossed the wrong man, if you know what I mean.
And what's even cooler, we're seeing him here. Well, there's a footage on the network of him as gay Gary Hart, as a wrestler.
And he hated again. Yes, we all know he hated that. Hated it.
And it's just tremendous, tremendous. Oh man.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And then we get a match here, Kelly. Al Madrill, Armand Hussein. Can Madrill save this?
He kind of can. Good old Al is the master of the two-star match, as I've said. And, I mean, Hussein, my first note is he just needs to hang up the boots and concentrate on managing immediately, because I don't see the need for him to be in the ring anymore because he stinks.
Yeah, you know, and they can hang up real easily.
Yes, exactly. they're just begging to be hung up.
Before you get too deep into this, Kelly, I want to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Having a manager wrestle, doesn't that kind of take away the aura or like the paybacks or the revenge that you can get on a manager?
Yeah.
Doesn't it kind of dilute that
revenge? Yeah, because it has nothing to do with his managing. He's just still wrestling. It's like he's supplementing his income or something. He's not making enough money as a manager. He still has to wrestle. It has nothing to do with what he's doing as a manager. It's like he's two different characters, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely hate it. What about you?
Well, again, he's the man of two identities and everything. We pointed this out. In the ring, he's this ridiculous old stereotype that's fucking awful and offensive, and he stinks. but he's decent as a manager, and he kind of dig him in that way. And you're right, it's totally unrelated. It's two different characters.
Yeah, but they're not. I mean, that's just.
Well, I know they're not really. He's not Mick Foley of personalities, but you know, it's you just pick one or the other, and I think we.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, okay, it's strange.
Finish up the match analysis.
So Madrill, I've come to the decision that he's kind of like a poor man's Tito Santana or Rick Martel. He's, you know, he's.
I mean, a real poor.
No, it's not that destitute. He's got good fire, and the crowd gets behind him every time. You know, he's that kind of a baby face.
They love him.
He gets hot.
They love him.
Yeah, they love him. And then this match had okay energy. It spilled to the outside, and Hussein actually choked Al with the camera cable. It got a little nasty. And then Al made a pretty good fired up comeback from that. And how did this one end? He got the win. Yeah, he pinned Hussein after failing on the corner charge, which is often the death knell for baby faces. And then Hussein attacked him post match. Yeah, a 2-star bout, solid 2-star bout. That's Al Madrill's specialty.
Yeah, I think you're being a little kind comparing him to Tito and Martel.
Against Tito.
I could finally maybe buy into a poor man's Jim Powers.
No, he's better.
He's way better than Powers.
He's way better than Jim Powers, dude.
Jim Powers is a poor man's Al Madrill.
Jim Powers is a poor man's Jim Powers. He stinks.
All right, Johnny, what were you?
Well, first of all, the last time we saw these two, fucking Hussein was fucking punching Al in the fucking face, you know, for calling him an ape. So I was like, oh, what are we gonna get here? You're thinking, are they gonna shoot? but to that point, the match starts. Ding ding. Hussein charges Al and like charges him and gets right on top of him and then just does some very light shit. Like he's basically saying, listen, motherfucker, I could have just punched you again, but I'm going to show you that I know how to do business. And unfortunately, that business is be awful in the ring because Al's trying. Al's good. There's a kid. There's about a 15, 16-year-old young Mexican kid who is apparently Al Madrill's biggest fan, you know, to the point. They cut to Al's doing something heroic, and they cut to this kid where he's cheering for him to Hulk up, and he's just clapping his hands with delight and cheering for Al, and you could tell that that's his hero. And there's people love him there, man. But Hussein gets this line. It's the only good thing he did, besides the cable on the outside. The camera was pointing right up at the turnbuckle, and they were in the corner, and he's choking Al. And he looks right at the camera, and he yells, what is it? He yells, I got him now. I'll kill the dog. It was like over the top and wacky, but he had the presence of the cameras, and he played to it, you know, which is pretty cool. So just practice talking.
Like the twist of the mustache.
I loved it. And then the chicks, man, not just the little boy who has odd feelings about Al Madrill, he can't explain. But the chicks with the glasses, they're really into Al too, because when he's down, they cut to them and she's screaming, Al, get up! Get up! So, you know, I don't think Al Madrill sets the world on fire, but he's definitely over, you know, and he's exactly what Kelly said. He's the king of the 2-star match.
Yeah, he really is. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but did you see how Madrill made his comeback?
I don't remember.
It was a David Manning interference.
I'm glad I didn't see it. I would have been fucking angry.
I'm like, are you kidding? The babyface is making a comeback on a referee interference spot. Freaking horrible.
David Manning trying to be
the manager in this role. I mean, the fact that David Manning out babyfaces the babyface by setting up his comeback.
Oh, fuck him.
Just terrible. But Madrill throws a good punch. And you're right, he's very serviceable. He's able to build his matches about around fire, mm-hmm. Come back, see when the ref helps him, and it builds a lot of it around a good-looking punch that he's able to get a lot of mileage out of. Mm-hmm. I know Shawn Michaels held Al into sort of high regard, and he showed him a lot of the ropes, but also showed him how to do shortcuts. And I you can see he never went all full tilt and board. He was more than happy to fill out the card and get that 2-star match. Then we get a what has happened here? An Irwin's handicap match against Richard Blood and Mike Bond.
Yep.
What about this guy?
Well, geez, Richard Blood is someone that I've kind of championed a bit so far. Is now basically a total jobber because he's in this. The handicap situation where Irwin just squashes both of them quickly. He had to beat both guys, and he does that in just a couple minutes. Bond at least goes down first, and then Blood shortly thereafter. And I like this in the sense they're making Irwin look super strong. He's a killer. He's the Texas champion. Obviously, Fritz and Gary Hart, I guess, really liked him because he's getting a huge push at this time, basically. He's on TV constantly, multiple segments, remember, multiple interviews. He's killing guys now, so they're really high on Wild Bill here.
What about you, John?
Well, it's funny because I was flipping through Twitter the other day, and I'm on Kevin Von Erich's thing, so I see what he puts up. And there was like a little clip from the footage we're watching, and Kevin Von Erich was something like, "Well, Bill Irwin was a great talent. He could do it all." Da 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 da. You know, I was like, "Oh, that's convenient considering what we're doing right now." And number one, Minnelli stinks, so got to point that out. But you know what? I didn't even write down what he did wrong. It's just he's Minnelli. You know, he just stinks in general. I'm just imagining somewhere in the sportatorium, where, you know, there's that one nerd fan, you know, who's ahead of his time, who's, you know, if he could start a newsletter, he would. There's no internet. Who's very upset about the treatment of this up-and-coming young talent, Richard Blood and Mike Bond, and how they're just wasting them, and they're fucked up, they don't know how to run business. Because I was like, really? They killed these two guys? It seemed odd. But Mark Lorenz gets this line off about the current program. He goes, "Oh, what a night it's been. Entertaining, exciting, scary at times." I was like, "Ooh, sounds like my Tinder profile." and then these people start chanting Chauncey again. And I'm like, "Don't you fucking dare. Don't you fucking dare."
I thought we were gone. I thought we were left.
Oh, I thought it was done.
Rearing his ugly head.
Oh, fuck you people. That's all there is about this. There's nothing.
Yeah, you know, I thought Irwin did a good job in the handicap match. Made him seem a little special. It looked like he got a little winded towards the end.
To beat two guys.
That was odd. I actually thought that when he pins Bond and Blood blindsides him, I was like, "Well, fuck you, Blood. That's not what a baby face." I'm like, "Oh, wait. Oh. He's got to be both of them? That's weird."
For a heel.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, that leads us to the main event. Mm-hmm. And, Kelly, why don't you talk about this? This, to me, by far, was the best main event we've had in the sense where it encompassed everything. Hot angle, post-match, all action, super heated, a little bit of blood. Pretty much everything you really want. It really felt episodic and a great way to close out a show. What were your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, I totally agree. Best main event. Best thing we've seen. I mean, the Jose Lothario, Bugsy McGraw brawl was great, but this match had so much more because it had the outside the ring stuff, the angle with Fritz that's been going on for months, and then he's involved, and it just got crazy. The crowd was super, super hot for this one. Felt like a big-time match, and they go at it right from the beginning. Total brawl. Kabuki when he took over with that thrust kick. That was awesome. Yeah, and I love the nerve hold that he uses, or whatever you want to call it. It's not really a traditional nerve hold, because that actually hurts. If you get squeezed in that spot, you know, that's painful. You know, the other nerve holds, the typical Asian nerve hold looks like a massage or whatever, and it doesn't look painful. But what Kabuki does actually really hurts. And
yeah, he gets it like right into the shoulder.
Yeah, it's a tender.
Right underneath
your, yeah.
Well, right underneath your tendon. And
yeah, it's a real tender spot. And then Kevin used the stomach claw, which is the lesser of the claw options. So that's not going to work. And yeah, just a lot of good struggle by both guys for holds and the advantage. And then it gets all crazy at the end. Neither man can really hold the advantage for any length of time. There's no pinfalls attempted, I don't think, through the whole match. It's just a hate-filled match. And Kevin's bloody, I think, maybe a hard way on, like, I think his nose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, that nose.
Yeah. And then we get a brawl outside. Fritz and Gary Hart get involved. Fritz, doesn't he trip at one point over a chair? And then they get us spill into the crowd, and Hart's falling. Wild scene. Bundy gets involved. Felt out of control. I really, really like this. I gave it 3.5, 3.5 stars, baby.
Okay, Johnny, what were your thoughts?
Oh, this was awesome. But so starts out, they're chanting, "We want Fritz," like a motherfucker there. So again, he's their most over baby face. And Kevin just attacks right away, man, and it is awesome. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. Does Fritz Von Erich have a manager's license? What's he doing out there, Schermacher? He doesn't have a manager's license. He doesn't belong out there. It's ridiculous. It's the bias.
You're the owner of the company. You can go wherever you want.
No, it's bias. It's typical bias. it's a wild brawl. Everything you said, it's fantastic. And the camera catches this chick and her man, and they're digging it, and she's into it, and she sees the cameras on her, and she goes, "Take it off me." She doesn't want to be seen on TV. She went there with her boyfriend or her husband, thinking this is all fucking stupid and this is so good. She's getting crazy, but she's like, "Oh no, I do not want to be on television." it's great. And fucking Fritz, man, he keeps going after Gary Hart, who's not doing anything. He's not doing anything. He's managing. Literally, he's sitting in a chair, which Mark Lorenz points out, mind you. He's like, but then the minute Mark Lorenz points out that Gary Hart stayed in his chair the whole time, literally 2 seconds later, Gary Hart gets out of his chair. Fritz just keeps going at him. And then Kevin and Fritz attack Gary Hart for no reason. With no provocation, they're both out there, and they just jump them. And I'm like, "Fuck you! What the fuck, man?" And it's nuts. Cause Gary Hart's falling down. So again, all of you, Gary Hart never bumps. That guy, that's broken neck, Gary Hart, and that's a bump. Okay, so no matter how awkward it looks, Bundy's a good man, because Bundy comes to the rescue. You know, these hooligans are beating up this injured man who hasn't done anything to deserve it. And Bundy comes down and starts kicking ass, and it's wild. And with the wild finish, the way the camera shots were snapping, it felt really ECW-ish. You know, in the good way. It's too bad they gave all this away briefly previously, because they showed these matches out of the order they were taped. Because in the previous match, Mark Lawrence mentions the wild finish with King Kong Bundy and the Kevin Kabuki incident. And I'm like, I guess that's what we're seeing later. But it doesn't even matter, because this was definitely the best thing we have seen yet. And then when Fritz is given the promo, and Kevin's there, and when I saw Kevin's face, I was like, "Holy shit! Nose is busted. He's got an abrasion on his cheek, and over here, man, he got fucked up hard way. And he's going, don't hurt a bit. Don't hurt a bit. And Fritz said, they broke my boy's nose. And Kevin, as we pointed out before, not the greatest on the stick ever, is awesome here with just this one line. He gets it in. He goes, it don't hurt a bit. There's plenty more where that came from, Kabuki. And then storms off. I was like, fuck, yes. This is why Kevin's my favorite Von Erich.
Yeah, it's like he got caught up in the moment and became real.
Oh, and fantastic. Totally. So good. It was so good. Definitely, the best thing we've seen yet.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. It was totally episodic. I can't put over how hot the crowd was for this. Because, this was a lot of all-action brawling. But, I thought the crowd was what really made this segment. Mm-hmm. Having Fritz and Hart both out there up the ante.
Yep.
And we get this huge, huge, big fight right off the bat. This might be the hottest crowd we've had all since we've been watching this.
Yeah.
Kevin is believable, and there's an earnest to him that you believe that he really wants to kick the shit out of Kabuki.
Mm-hmm.
I love the slamming of the claw. I thought that was really good. Fritz and Hart fighting on the floor was tremendous. Bundy coming out just up the ante again. Great umbrella storytelling. You know, it's one of my favorite mm-hmm. terms, because you had Kevin and Kabuki. Then you open up the umbrella and there's Gary Hart and Fritz being extended out. Oh, hey, now here's King Kong Bundy coming out. Mm-hmm. So there's another part of the umbrella. So it's all encompassing stories. It's been bringing more people in. Absolutely loved it. Awesome segment. And then we get those promos, which were really super believable in the moment. You know, mm-hmm. is it like one of those all-time classic Hard Times promo? No, but it's one of those moments where you're in the middle of it and it just fit the mood. Mm-hmm. The mood and the tension and the moment spot on perfectly. Kelly, do you have any thoughts on the promo to close up?
You guys covered it. It was after that, all that went down, it was perfect. Kevin all beat up and scuffed up, but they were wanting revenge. It was great. It paid off all the weeks we've watched with the Kabuki stuff in the background and Fritz and all that. And now it's bumped it to another level.
Hell yeah, that was the best way. By far, I think the best closing angle match we've had. Mm-hmm. And a segment felt episodic, where like you really need to make sure you're there next week to see what happens.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that show was kind of lackluster. They didn't follow up with it strong. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear our thoughts on that in the following weeks.
Yeah, I have one question. It just occurred to me, and I remember this.
Okay.
At one point, Kevin's doing, he's trying to put the claw on Kabuki's head, face. And he goes to the belly, and then he gets it on him again, but he gets it on his head, and the ref breaks it.
Right.
You got to break that. I was like, what? Why? What is that?
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
I
think it's just inconsistency here sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because I'm like, was there some angle to it, or was it not technically legal, and it was just one of those things? Because there's always moves like that that aren't, to a lesser extent, Tajiri's tarantula. So it's always illegal, but it's big.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know there was ever that aspect to the Von Erich Iron Claw.
Yeah, it seemed random and yeah.
I think it was because the match was so chaotic.
Yeah,
I don't give a shit. It's fantastic. I just remember being very surprised by that.
Well, hey, on that note, would you guys say this is an episode that people really shouldn't miss? What about you, Kelly?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The undercard matches. Some good stuff there, but the main event definitely it needs to be seen. It's a sure. Big highlight.
Main event, Gary Hart interview. Everything else you can live without. But yeah, those two things are definitely keepers.
I think they should watch all of this, because that's how you enjoy what we do even more.
I'm just saying, if you just I'm all for watching it all, but if you only have 20 minutes, I would pick and choose those two
things. Oh, I'm saying just take the journey with us. You're our fans.
There you go. So, Johnny, speaking of fans, do you have anything you want to
talk about? No, but speaking of, that's a hell of a fucking segue, bro. Yeah, we were talking about this. Get in touch with us. Those of you who listen to this and are enjoying it, let us know what you think. Comments, jokes, observations, whatever. And you can make these at on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. At Titans O Wrestling. That's TitansOWrestling. And we'll read them on the air. You know, so you just tell us what you got to say. You enjoy the show, what you're not enjoying, and now leave that shit out. But you know, anything, your takes on some of the matches.
Leave that noise out. Yeah,
your takes on some of the matches. Tell us if you think we're full of shit about something. But anyway, you know, let us know. And thanks for listening.
Definitely, Kelly. What about you, brother?
I feel like we've gone back to 2013, and then the original
mailbag.
Yeah, or well, the member how the Twitter, how, it's Pete's Twitter now, but originally it was everybody's Twitter.
Why get a new one?
We've come full circle. Mm-hmm. Things to hype. Place to Be Nation. Place to Be Podcast. Pete and I will be on there shortly doing a mega show on the build to WrestleMania 3. That should be something. And I still need to record the second part of Mount Olympus with Landy to finish off the unreleased DVD. Who knows when that's going to drop. It could be tomorrow. It could be...
Talk about hitting when the fire's hot.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had my honeymoon, so that kind of sabotaged the topical aspect of it, but hey, I always finish what I start, except for At the Garden and tag teams back again and a few other things, but I promise I'll finish this. Well, we finished.
Oh, Kelly, I promise you.
Did we finish Titans, really?
Well, we had a final episode.
Yeah, we did. We did. Kelly, that reminds me, I'm going to be mailing you that Batista figure any day now.
Yeah, my mantle has been lonely and waiting for that for a couple of years now. So, yes, please do.
Yeah, man, if you guys like, again, like Johnny said, you can follow me on follow Titans O Wrestling on Twitter. I was doing another podcast, This Week in Wrestling, where I talk more about indie wrestling. So if you want to hear my takes on more of the current guys not on the big leagues, give me a holla or give me a listen with my boy Timothy. And have a great week, man. And just keep on watching wrestling, especially world class, because you know what? It means you can now enjoy our show even more because you're informed. Have a great week. All right, guys, I'll let you go. I'll send this over to you, Kelly. I heard, they did a Halloween special on one of the Place to Be Us, and they referred to the three of us as the Golden Girls.
It was on Greetings from Allentown, that it's an awesome pod. Hyped it a million times. No, because he compared Titans of Wrestling to the Golden Girls.
We're the spinoff, the Golden Palace?
The Golden Palace, yeah.
That's fantastic. I love it.
Marv is B. Arthur. it's great. Peter, who does Greetings from Allentown's awesome. You guys got to listen to that show. It's an amazing show.
I really, you know what? I didn't want to because I was like, oh, shit, we talked about and everything. But you keep telling me how good it is. Yeah.
He's really good. He's really, really good. Yeah. And
who were we three of the Golden Girls?
Johnny was Estelle, of course. The old one. What was her name? Estelle?
Estelle Getty?
So, yeah.
Yeah, she was the actress, Johnny's the...
Good, she stole the show.
I'm Rose, and Pete, you're Blanche.
Pete's Blanche? Yeah. Please look. Pete's the whore. I have Alzheimer's, Pete's a whore, and Kelly's a simpleton from the Northwest.
Yeah, from Minnesota. Which is, I have family roots in Minnesota State, so
it's Tarvis fucking
PR. That's the perfect one. Tarvis totally PR.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you. Texas with you, like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.